It's Thursday, March 25th. Are 60 votes overrated? We start here. A simple majority won't cut it in the Senate for now.
Anybody can be king in a 50-50 Senate.
This week, with Democrats calling gun violence an emergency, what could be worth throwing out the rulebook for? The number of reporters allowed inside a detention facility just went from 0 to 1.
However, those pictures in this facility, it's a facility that's not as overcrowded.
The most shocking images are still coming from the border itself, though. Our team describes what they're seeing. And she expected some breathing trouble. She didn't expect this.
Even though my vision comes out fine on an eye chart, I'm telling you, I can't see as well.
If you thought COVID-19 was just a respiratory virus, you're going to want to hear what long haulers are going through. From ABC News, this is Start Here. I'm Brad Mielke. Later today, a 21-year-old man will appear in court for the first time, charged with murdering 10 people at a grocery store in Boulder, Colorado. Police are still looking through anything they can find for a motive, why this young man, whom former classmates described as generally pleasant but sometimes quick to anger.
He was convicted in 2018 for misdemeanor assault on a high school student and once threatened to kill his peers.
Why he would make the leap he is accused of making, leaving behind so much carnage.
According to the Boulder Police Department's arrest affidavit, the alleged shooter methodically marched through the store and parking lot where witnesses say he shot an elderly man and then stood over him and shot him multiple additional times.
Well, remember, one of the reasons this attack was so deadly was because of the weaponry used. A long gun, an AR-style semi-automatic rifle, rounds that can pierce the average street cop's protective vest.
Is that what happens when you close your eyes at night, that you see
I just wake
where you
up.
Were and
I wake
hear
up.
The gunfire?
It's a gunfire. I wake up. Bow, 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 bow. Bow, bow, bow.
And experts say over the last year, more and more Americans have been stocking up on guns, on rifles, on ammunition. Nearly everyone is in a more emotionally volatile place than a year ago. These experts say you could very easily see more of these types of attacks. Well, yesterday in Atlanta, less than half an hour away from the site of a different mass shooting a week prior, police responded to another supermarket, where this time a man had just walked in armed with 2 long guns, 3 handguns, and body armor. No shots were fired. The man was detained. But this right here was an example of the sheer amount of firepower the police and lawmakers are worried about.
We all want our lives and our country to return to normal, but not this normal. Oh, no. Not the normal that accepts everyday gun violence as a matter of course.
These despicable acts of violence should need to be condemned for what they are. But the legislative solutions have been perplexing.
And so yesterday in Washington, we saw what you might expect, Congress arguing over guns. None of that is new, but what happens next might be new, because some members of Congress are increasingly becoming convinced that they need to make big changes to the way lawmaking in Washington is done. And if they go the direction that some are thinking they might, it could affect a lot more than guns. Let's go to ABC's chief Washington correspondent this morning, Jonathan Carl. Jonathan, I mean, the Senate did not pass major legislation when Sandy Hook happened in 2012. And let's remember, Democrats there had like 58 votes in the Senate. This time, they got 50. So realistically here, what are the options for President Biden?
You know, it's pretty grim if you are in favor of tougher gun laws. Sandy Hook was a moment. And you remember how high a priority that was for the Obama White House.
Before I begin today, let me say to the families of the innocents who were murdered 33 days ago, our heart goes out to you.
The way that those families, those Sandy Hook families, still raw from that horrible tragedy, directly got involved in the efforts to try to push something through Congress.
The world has changed, and it's demanding action.
And it didn't go. And let's not forget that the point person on that for Obama was his vice president. You may remember his name was Joe Biden.
Executive actions are, of course, an important lever that every president has at their disposal. There's current discussions and analysis internally of what steps can be taken. That has been ongoing.
You know, he's got a range of possible executive actions that he can do. He can actually strengthen background checks to a degree through executive action. There's talk of requiring background checks on so-called ghost guns. This is when you buy parts for guns and assemble them yourself. There are steps he can make through executive action to assure that law enforcement is notified when somebody fails a background check attempting to buy a gun. But, you know, Obama went through all of this.
You know, in the letter that Julia wrote me, she said, "I know that laws have to be passed by Congress, but I beg you to try very hard."
When the Democrats have the White House again, if Mitch McConnell tries to do what he did to President Obama and put small-minded partisanship ahead of solving the massive problems in this country, then we should get rid of the filibuster.
So that leaves the question of whether or not he can get something done through Congress by perhaps eliminating the filibuster. This, of course, is something progressives have been urging the president to get behind and support. But I got to tell you, Brad, for all the talk on this, remember, we have a 50-50 Senate. To eliminate that filibuster, you need those 50 votes.
Can you imagine not having to sit down, or there's no reason for you to sit down with your colleagues on both sides and have their input?
You need all Democrats to stand in line on this.
I'm willing to look at any way we can, but I am not willing to take away the involvement of the minority.
And at least as of now, I see nothing that has changed. The fact that both Senator Sinema of Arizona and Senator Manchin of West Virginia say they are opposed to eliminating the filibuster. And I don't think that the gun issue changes that calculus at all.
And that was what I was kind of wondering, John, because even in addition to guns, like this week, I feel like we're seeing a ton of really big issues that Democrats say they are very much behind. And everyone's asking them, are any of these things that could push Democrats over the edge? Like, are their issues so near and dear to their hearts that they would consider going nuclear on this, as it were?
Well, the Democrats are about to get very frustrated as the agenda gets stymied in Congress.
This bill is essential to protecting every American's right to vote.
H.R. 1, top priority for Democrats in the House is voting rights.
This bill is the single most dangerous bill this committee has ever considered.
This is not something that is going to be passed in a 50-50 Senate as long as there's a filibuster.
It used to be that infrastructure wasn't a Democrat or Republican issue. Not many Republican or Democratic roads and bridges.
The big infrastructure plans that Biden has in mind, Green New Deal style legislation to deal with climate change.
I will not sit idly by for 4 years and watch the administration, the Biden administration, have its key nominations and its policy agenda thwarted.
Big, bold Democratic initiatives, top priorities for Biden. But, you know, they run into the reality of a 50-50 Senate where the filibuster, at least for now, is alive and well.
There's no API representation in the cabinet. There's not a single API in a cabinet position.
Going up?
That's not acceptable.
I feel like we basically saw the power of a 50-50 Congress this week, where Senator Tammy Duckworth basically said, listen, you guys have barely considered anyone of Asian descent in your larger cabinet. Like, forget, I'm not confirming a straight white guy until I see some changes here.
Yes, this shows. So all the attention's been on Manchin. But anybody can be king in a 50-50 Senate. I mean, Tammy Duckworth showed it.
Hopefully they figure it out, but I'm going to know on everything other than the diversity candidates.
Withhold your vote, Democrats lose their majority, no matter what the issue is.
And as we noted in a statement we released last night, we are also adding a senior level Asian American Pacific Islander liaison who will ensure the community's voice is further represented.
So, you know, he's got to walk a very narrow line here.
Mitch McConnell has essentially said, you have no idea what I'm capable of. You have no idea what hell looks like until you get rid of the filibuster.
You know, they talk about the nuclear option, doing away with the filibuster.
They will find a Senate that will not function. It takes unanimous consent to turn the lights on here.
McConnell's invoking the idea of a nuclear winter, trying to tell people that the Senate will be ground to a complete halt.
And again, just imagine like the larger ripple effects of if the filibuster went away. We're talking like the Democrats filibustered a border wall. The Democrats filibustered imprisonment for doctors in certain abortion scenarios. I mean, those things would be law right now under the rules that some Democrats say we just got to go for it. All right. Jonathan Carl, thank you.
Thanks, Brad.
Think for a second of all the overwhelming numbers we have heard about lately at the border.
Now to the growing crisis on the border. Over 15,000 unaccompanied minors now in U.S. custody, 5,000 of them with Border Patrol.
All the talk about a government that's capable of handling a few hundred children arriving per day when 600 children are arriving per day.
What it looks like are children standing up with nowhere to sit down, children who can't all lay down at the same time.
All the descriptions of kids sitting in bare cells, pens, really, for more than a week at a time. Well, for all the outrage that has received, the Biden administration had still not allowed members of the news media to see this for themselves, to relay that information straight to Americans.
For the first time tonight, the administration now allowing cameras inside a facility for unaccompanied minors in Texas.
That changed at one facility yesterday. And our producer, ABC's Ignacio Torres, has just returned from a trip to the southern border where he watched really the final leg of these young people's journeys. Ignacio, I mean, before we get to the American facilities, can you just describe what you saw when it comes to these kids? Because you were literally watching them cross the border, right?
That's right, Brad. A group of us, myself, Chief White House Correspondent Cecilia Vega, and a couple other producers ended up getting to ride along with local deputies.
And I'm surprised to see all these vehicles over here, because that is usually a crossing.
Who took us to this area where it tends to be very popular for families and children in particular to come to the U.S., cross the Rio Grande.
Come across here on a raft or a small boat or whatever. Here, they walked over.
And then step foot in U.S. soil. It was there that within 15 minutes of being on this dusty road, pitch dark,
just to realize, I got another group over here.
We ended up finding a group of families. In that group of families, so many children. We saw children who were 9, 10, 15, all of them strangers to one another, traveling alone all the way from Honduras, Guatemala, and El Salvador.
Wait, so these are kids who are all by themselves. Like, there's families there, but then among them, there are children who just made this journey alone.
That's correct. It was a mixture. It was entire family units, but also children just traveling on their own.
So they finally reach the U.S. side, and they get apprehended by authorities, right? Like, that's even part of the plan. Like, these are not kids who somehow expect to keep traveling, right?
That's right, Brad. All these families are specifically looking for agents. They want to turn themselves in and make an asylum claim. And Brad, I've been to the border multiple times over the last couple of years. And to be honest, I've never seen anything like this. Before, you would see maybe one, two children coming along with parents.
He wants to get asylum here, he says. See?
This time, it was a lot of children. And you could see it in their faces. 9, 10-year-olds.
He still wants to watch more, he says.
They're still babies. It really does hit you, and you can really tell their innocence because as soon as you approach them, like a reflex, they bring out items.
This is his grandfather's phone number. Se llama Marco. Sí.
We met one boy. He was just 9 years old. He showed us a pink hat. He brought it out of his backpack. And in that pink hat, at the very bottom, it was the name of his grandfather and the phone number. And that's their lifeline. That's how they know they will be able to come into the country.
I said, do you have any sense of what happens to you next? He said, I don't know. Only God knows. I got to tell you, after just talking with these kids here, this hits you, man. This is really hard.
Okay, and so then they go into one of these facilities, right? And so we're finally getting a sense of what these facilities look like. I mean, what do we know?
That's right. They present themselves to Border Patrol And then they start processing them, getting those phone numbers that they have on their clothing, and start reaching out to family members. But before then, they take them to facilities where they have to confirm that these family members are in fact family. And we've seen those pictures.
Tonight, for the first time, the Biden administration allowing cameras inside a facility for unaccompanied children. The access limited, only one camera allowed in.
Of course, the administration has been hesitant to allow a lot of journalists or journalists in general to go and personally see those facilities. Yesterday was the first day that the administration allowed a journalist to enter one of these facilities and see it for themselves.
And they get their own bedding and their sports activities.
However, those pictures in this facility, it's a facility that's not as overcrowded.
One of the biggest complaints here is they don't get enough pizza. They love pizza.
It's a facility that has yet to meet its capacity. Mm. So to compare those images in comparison to the Donna facility, facilities that are way beyond capacity, it's a sharp contrast.
So then what is the plan then from the Biden administration? Because like every day you've got Republicans and also Democrats saying like this cannot go on like this. The White House has said Vice President Harris is now in charge of fixing this. What would you do?
The administration continues to say that they will not be returning children back to their countries, that they're going to let the children stay here.
Tough job, and you're smiling, but there's no one better capable of trying to organize this.
Well, thank you, Mr. President, and for having the confidence in me. And there's no question that this is a challenging situation.
One of the priorities is how can they actually target the root of this migration.
We will collaborate with Mexico and other countries throughout the Western Hemisphere.
By talking to countries in Central America, countries like Mexico, to make sure that a lot of this migration is stopped before a lot of these families begin their journey to begin with. I actually ended up calling one of those phone numbers underneath that hat, and I got in contact with the grandfather of this kid, and he told me specifically it was the mom who wrote that number down. She decided not to come because she had heard that only children are allowed to stay. Families get returned. So she decided to make sure that this kid ended up coming by himself. So in a big way, yes, that may be just one of the reasons why we're seeing more and more children making that journey alone.
And just such a perilous journey, too. So you can only imagine what is driving them from those homes in the first place. All right, Ignacio Torres, thank you.
Thank you, Brad.
Next up on Start Here, 1 year later, shortness of breath doesn't explain why people are losing their memory. New research on COVID after the break. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Have you ever wondered what you would do with an extra hour in your day? I think about this all the time. I'm like, I would be so productive. I'd exercise more, or I'd read a book, or I'd take a nap, like restore myself. We often find ourselves yearning for these extra hours, but the real question is, what would you do if you were making yourself a priority? Well, how about therapy? It can help you discover what's important so you can make the most of your time. If you've ever benefited from therapy, you know how transformative it can be. It's not just for those who have experienced major trauma. Therapy empowers you to learn positive coping skills, set boundaries, and become the best version of yourself. If you're considering starting therapy, you should give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and tailored to your schedule. You just fill out a brief questionnaire. You'll be matched with a licensed therapist. And here's the beauty of it. You can switch therapists if you're not finding the right fit. No additional charge. Take the first step. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/starthere today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/starthere. With daylight saving time upon us, we're looking forward to more daylight and longer days from March through November. And while setting our clocks forward gives us the illusion of more time, it doesn't necessarily help businesses find qualified candidates any sooner. Fear not, there is a solution. ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter is your 24/7 hiring partner working tirelessly to connect you with the right candidate. Once you post your job on ZipRecruiter, it gets distributed to over 100 job sites, ensuring you reach a diverse pool of qualified individuals. Their smart technology scans thousands of resumes, matching you with people whose skills perfectly align with your job requirements. Spring forward with a new hiring partner, ZipRecruiter, and find top talent sooner. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address to try ZipRecruiter for free, ZipRecruiter.com/start here. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/start here. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
We've got the exclusive view behind the table. Every day, right after the show, while the topics are still hot, the ladies go deeper into the moments that make the view, the view. The Views Behind the Table podcast. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
At this point, more than 30 million Americans have been confirmed to be infected with COVID-19 at some point in this pandemic. Out of them, nearly 550,000 have now died. Meaning, if you pick 10 random adults in this country, at least one of them has contracted this coronavirus in the last year and survived. Well, increasingly, we found that for many of these nearly 30 million Americans, surviving COVID does not mean you're done with COVID. We've heard about shortness of breath, heart problems continuing on, but it goes beyond that. If you've recovered, but you feel like your brain still isn't 100%, that's not just you. Diana Behrendt actually contracted COVID early on in the pandemic. She's seen the effects linger in many ways, so much so that she founded a group called Survivor Corps. Diana, how common is this now that you're hearing from so many people?
Long-term COVID can present in 3 different buckets, I would say. There are the people who get sick on day one, and they are chronically sick every day thereafter. So these are people who are on day 300 of having a fever and having extreme chronic symptoms. Mm. Then there's a second bucket. That was my group where I actually got out of isolation. I felt pretty good. Hmm. I went in and I was donating plasma and I felt really okay. And then I had a full symptomatic relapse over the summer and all the symptoms came back. I ended up going through the post-COVID care center at Mount Sinai and I went to a neurologist, I went to ENT, and I ended up being diagnosed with post-COVID glaucoma. And really? Also, I ended up in the hospital just last month for the first time, actually, with a lesion in my cheek muscle that doesn't look like any lesion any doctor has seen before. So another medical mystery.
And this was not stuff that you saw early on. This is like just this ever-growing spiral of symptoms.
Absolutely. And I would give the third bucket of people are the people who think that they are recovered. So it's not a free ride just because you didn't have symptoms in the beginning or you just had a scratchy throat. We're seeing real serious long-term COVID complications with those people as well.
The last time I felt like myself was before I was diagnosed with COVID.
I would get very dizzy and lightheaded when I would, any movement, sitting down, standing up.
For the last couple of months, I've been dealing with really bad asthma.
My heart rate is so high and I can't move from the couch and I can't breathe.
These are people who, you know, one shower wipes them out for the day.
We kind of call it the Corona coaster because one day could be okay and the next day I'm on the floor having convulsions, thinking I'm having a heart attack.
My son is 12 years old. He had a very average case of COVID last year for, you know, mm-hmm. for an 11-year-old. And I never would have called him a long-haul kid. Right. And it was not until 9 months later that one of his front adult teeth fell out spontaneously with no blood loss from vascular damage to his jaw.
Wow.
So it can act like a ticking time bomb in your body. So not only are we seeing neurological issues, we are seeing actual brain damage as well.
Well, and yeah, so let's talk about the brain, because what's so interesting that a lot of people see this as a respiratory disease, right? It affects your lungs, it affects maybe your heart. And yet just this week, there's this new study from Northwestern showing out of 100 patients who continue to experience these, you know, long-haul symptoms,
Like 85% of them say they include neurological symptoms, like the brain.
Absolutely. And, you know, as shocking as that study was, I wasn't surprised by it in the slightest. I've been saying for months that we started off thinking of COVID as a respiratory disease. We then understood it to be also a vascular and inflammatory disease. So I think that we will look back on COVID is in large part as a neurological disease. And I think that one of the lesser one of the parts of acute COVID that people have really not focused on is the encephalitis part of it. And so when we're talking about
What is that?
So it's inflammation of the brain.
Symptoms like confusion, disorientation, or lack of alertness aren't common in COVID-19, and they raise the possibility of brain involvement. Now, necrotizing encephalitis, which can be caused by other viruses like influenza and even chickenpox, is one of the conditions that doctors consider.
I think that what's really important is to look at these symptoms from a patient's perspective. So not just looking at what are the most often reported symptoms, but what are the things that are causing people the most distress? What are the keeping them from going back to work? Inability to concentrate, fatigue, memory problems, and extreme personality change, all neurological.
The headaches are so extreme that I'm taking migraine medicine and sleeping for, you know, 14 to 16 hours a day.
You know, I had a very average case of COVID. I didn't have, you know, I wasn't hospitalized. I had what you call the, you know, Tylenol and Gatorade variety of COVID.
Right.
My vision, like my, even though my vision comes out fine on an eye chart, I'm telling you, I can't see as well. And everybody is saying the same thing. I had full-on hallucinations when I had COVID. And some people continue to have those. We're seeing people, including children, having psychiatric breaks.
Just this week, Texas Roadhouse founder and CEO Kent Taylor died by suicide. His family saying the 65-year-old took his own life after symptoms like severe tinnitus stemming from his battle with COVID-19 became unbearable.
And it's really important to really understand that when you're dealing with a brain injury or encephalitis, there are post-viral neurological issues that need to be looked at medically.
Yeah, wait, so is there a point at which, like, you hear something from somebody, a family, friend, whatever, and you go, that could be COVID. Like, that's worth getting checked out. Or, like, do people get, I don't know, discouraged sometimes seeking medical help because no one knows everything about this disease?
Yeah, I think it's pretty much the latter.
You can't predict what symptoms any particular individual is going to have. And some people are dealing with headaches, sleep problems. So it's not something to just toss off, oh, I can deal with not smelling for a while.
I went for a follow-up appointment on this abscess in my cheek last week to, you know, the head of ENT at Mount Sinai. And he looked at me at the end and said, you know, you really need to find a COVID expert. And then he like paused for a beat and we both looked at each other and sort of burst into laughter because it was just,
no.
Of course, there's no such thing.
Right.
You know, I would say that's one of the reasons why Survivor Corps has become so incredibly valuable to the scientific and medical community because, you know, when, you know, it's really the living proof of the old saying of when you need an expert, find a patient.
All right, Diana Barron went ahead and founded Survivor Corps looking to at least link people up with their shared experiences and point them in the right direction to a number of different researchers looking at all the different ways COVID continues to affect Americans. Thanks, Diana.
Thank you so much for having me on.
And one last thing. It's annoying when a package you're excited about gets stuck in traffic. You keep refreshing your phone. When's it going to get here? Well, right now there is an international traffic jam which is halting ships all around the world. And it's all because of one huge barge blocking the Suez Canal.
The vessel lost power, went dark, according to the ship's agent. Losing power meant losing propulsion. It also meant losing their steering.
So geography lesson, the Suez Canal, it's like the Panama Canal, but for Africa. So picture Africa. To the north, you got the Mediterranean Sea, right? Greece, Italy, the rest of Europe, it's up there. Well, then to the right, to the east of Africa, there's Saudi Arabia, and right between them, the Red Sea, right? That leads to the Arabian Sea, the Indian Sea, at least to the rest of the world. Well, the Suez Canal is the only way to get between these two bodies of water. It's almost 700 feet wide, which is like the height of Trump Tower in New York City. Only problem is this ship is the size of the Empire State Building. And during a sandstorm, visibility went to zero and it ran aground, wedging itself sideways. No one can pass it. And if most of us would go, ah, shucks, that's crazy, the shipping world would say, no, 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 you don't understand.
Suez Canal sees 10% of the world's trade go through it. Every day, 50 vessels on average go through that canal.
And a lot of these refineries run on very tight schedules, right? So even a 1-3 day delay really impacts things.
Electronics from Asia, clothing from India, and perhaps most urgently, oil from the Middle East. Now, ships are stuck waiting while towboats frantically try to tug this thing off the ground.
This sand, as you've seen from some of the pictures, you know, they're able to get, you know, diggers out to just dig out the sand, and hopefully that'll allow a little bit of room to pull the bows around.
But still more ships are sitting in their home ports, wondering, wait, which direction do we go? We'd waste a week going around Africa, but some analysts have said it might take that long to safely move this barge.
If they cannot free her from the banks, then they've got to find a way to offload some of those containers to reduce the weight.
With every passing hour, goods are being delayed, prices are poised to go up, and companies that ship stuff to you on land are now keeping a close eye on the water. The worst part about stories like this is, you know it's going to happen again, right? Like, it's just a fact. You can't make more of these canals. There's only so many places you can put them. And every year, the ramifications get bigger because we ship more and more stuff. Anyway, for a pick-me-up, big news in the podcast world. ABC's new Oscar podcast is up and running. Inside the Oscars, you can find it wherever you listen. More on all these stories at abcnews.com or the ABC News app. I'm Brad Milkey. See you tomorrow.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.